This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte is just one of the towns that make up Mecklenburg County, and much of what Charlotte is experiencing is also being felt in those areas. The impact of growth and development, the constant influx of newcomers, making sure our area remains healthy and prosperous is a constant and something Mecklenburg County deals with every day. But the job of making or ensuring county officials stay on top of things, the job of setting priorities, rests with the nine members of the Mecklenburg County Commission. As we recently did with members of Charlotte City Council, we're going to spend this hour with three of those commissioners to get an update on how they set their goals and priorities and where we are in the process of achieving them. George Dunlap, Lee Altman, and Mark Jarrell are with us. George Dunlap is chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission. He represents District 3. Lee Altman is an at-large member who chairs the Metropolitan Transit Commission, which oversees CATS. She serves on other committees as well. And Mark Jarrell is the vice chair of the County Commission, representing District 4 in the eastern part of the county. He also chairs the Intergovernmental Relations Committee. Welcome to all three of you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
And George, I'm going to start with you because in March you made the State of the County address. It's an annual event in which you said the state of the county is strong due to the intentional and bold efforts that will be even stronger in the future with the continued partnership, advocacy, and support of the community. A lot of people who live here, a lot of newcomers who just live here and they pay their taxes, have no idea because they don't get involved at all in the government. So explain to us who those partners that you're crediting here are.
Well, of course, we have our community partners being the residents who live here, as well as our governmental agencies and our corporate partners. I think we all work collectively together to ensure that the residents of Mecklenburg County have a positive experience, a good place to work, a good place to live. And I think collectively we do quite well. We know from surveys and from interacting with people that we're viewed very positively in terms of the actions that we take and the initiatives that we invest in.
Since you put citizens at the top of that list of partners, just give us a quick thumbnail on how citizens can best get involved. Because a lot of people, I guess they come to meetings or they come to some of the commission meetings, but most people do not. So how would you say they should get involved?
Well, of course, we're online. Our meetings are telecast. You can come in person to get involved. But there are always numerous of surveys and other things that take place that gives us an opportunity to gather feedback from the citizens. We're on the various social networks. So if people are interested, it shouldn't be difficult for them to find out what we're doing.
Mark Jarrell, you and George Dunlap are district representatives. Lee Altman is an at-large member, so she represents the entire county. So I'm just curious, and I think I asked you this before when you were on the program, how district representatives balance the needs of their districts with the needs of the community at large, because each of these districts is very different.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we've talked about this in the past. One of the things that we try to do is really look at the prioritization of what's happening at the district level, but understanding holistically, we have to understand what's happening across the county. We are blessed to have colleagues that really have high level discussions and interaction to make sure that we're complementing one another and really making sure that the priorities are focused on the needs of everyone. And typically what happens is when we synthesize that information, we find out that we're addressing the needs at the district level, but also across the county. And again, that just comes from knowing each other and having that consistent collaboration. And really, Mike, it comes down to trust. We have to trust one another. And when we set those priorities, our priorities are not just set from a district perspective. The priorities that we're looking at are really set from a community and a broad-based perspective that really impacts the districts.
And Lee, a lot of people who live here don't know, they just see the government as a single entity. But actually, if you live in Charlotte, you are, the city of Charlotte is one government, Mecklenburg County is another. If you live in Matthews, they have their own town council, so does Davidson, et cetera. So just give us a quick thumbnail. What do you do that those towns don't do? What are your, as the county, core responsibilities?
Well, that's a great question. And for listeners, let me just, you know, lay it a little more clearly to say that Mecklenburg County is obviously encompassed by the city of Charlotte, but there are six towns in the north and in the south. So that's Cornelius, Davidson, and Huntersville, Pineville, Matthews, and Mint Hill. So that's really what we're talking about here. Mecklenburg County government has a $2.3 billion budget, essentially for health and human services. We fund public health to the tune of $750 million, mental health, all of our DS, Department of Social Services programs. We fund park and recreation, the sheriff's office, Central Piedmont, and a whole host of other issues that go to the quality of life for our residents.
The commission sets priorities every year, I guess around this time of year, Mr. Dunlap. So what are they going to be for the coming year?
Well, actually, we set those priorities during our January budget retreat. So people tend to think that this is budget season because we adopt the budget during this time of year. But the budget process actually starts as early as January. And so this year, I think we decided to maintain the same priorities. We saw ourselves as making strides toward accomplishing some of the goals that we had set. We felt the need to continue working on those things. I think in the next election cycle, with the potential of new commissioners, there will probably be some desire to change, not necessarily change direction overall, but to either change some of the goals or maybe have more specific goals, should I say, in particular areas.
Well, that's 6 months away, that November election, in which we may see some change on county commission. I think that's what you're talking about there. But what are the priorities? If they haven't changed much, remind us what they are.
And you would ask me, education, guys, help me out.
So Mr. Chairman, if I could jump in here. So the priorities that we set revolve around housing insecurity, environmental leadership, educational attainment, health access, workforce development, early childcare development. And Mike, what we do is we look at those priorities, but we leverage a context of reducing racial disparities. So one of the things that came out of the pandemic, we saw the disparities just really grow, and they were really highlighted. And the board was really focused on making sure that reducing racial disparities was going to be at the forefront of everything that we did. And to George's point, as we look at these priorities, I mean, it is really, really important. And well, let me go back to what you asked me the first time. When you look at these priorities, they really intersect with district level priorities and overall community priorities.
George mentioned in the State of the County report that the state of the county is strong, but just like the national scene, President Biden would tell us that the state of the national economy is strong. Unemployment is low, employment is high, all the key economic indicators look pretty good. We avoided a recession, and yet there are a lot of people who are still suffering and would tell you that it ain't good for them. So when you say that the state of the county is strong, how would you rate the state of the county's residents?
You know, we have a lot of disparities in Mecklenburg County. There are pockets of the county that are very strong, and there are pockets of the county that are facing tremendous barriers for education, for employment, for safe neighborhoods. And that is why the three of us on this call and all of our nine colleagues get up every morning and do the hard work, because although writ large, Mecklenburg County is doing fantastic, we know that there are, you know, many, many residents who, you know, are still struggling to secure housing and even sometimes a steady source of food. So, you know, it's that is the work that we're focused on every single day.
affordable
Mike,
housing. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Let me just add that the people that you're talking about have varied degrees of need. Not everybody is housing insecure. Not everybody is food insecure. And so what we're learning is some of these people just need somebody to lead them by the hand to get them through the process. The services that they need are available. Whatever their concerns are available. But some people just don't know how to walk through the process. And so we're fortunate enough to have staff that we can call on and lead people to whatever their specific needs are.
I have to say we've done some shows on the process, and the process is difficult for even people who have been to have doctorates. It seems to be difficult. So I'm glad that there are people helping through it. One of the key issues that the city of Charlotte has been focusing on is affordable or workforce housing, keeping the supply we have, maintaining it, increasing the supply. We've had these $50 million bond referenda every couple of years on the part of the city. The county, George, takes a slightly different approach to help people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. Talk about that. What is your approach?
Well, we did a comprehensive study in Mecklenburg County to look at what the needs are, from a housing insecurity to just needing some additional income to pay the rent because they are a cost burden. And so our approach is a little bit different in that when we have land owned by Mecklenburg County or land that we sell by Mecklenburg County, we require the developers who purchase that land to do a certain percentage of affordable housing. We ourselves do affordable housing. And we also supplement other organizations that's doing affordable housing as a way of increasing our affordable housing stock. You know, I remember 6 years ago, Mecklenburg County did nothing in the way of affordable housing. We basically said if we acquired a home because of foreclosure, we'd turn it over to a nonprofit organization. They'd rehab it and sell it as affordable housing. That's basically what we did. But since that time, with the new commissioners, a different train of thought, different mindset, we are spending as much as, I think, $28 million a year now on affordable housing.
And we only have a minute left in this segment, Mark Terrell, but one of the priorities set by the county last year in the county budget was to reduce the number of residents experiencing homelessness and to advance stable housing options for all county residents. How would you assess where you are in achieving that goal?
Yeah, I would say, number one, it's still a challenge. We're definitely farther along than where we've been in the past. I think the county and our staff has a clear strategy and direction from the board as far as what we want to see. One of the things Commissioner Griffin brings up a lot is that, again, we've got to start benchmarking so that we can understand what progress looks like and be able to report that out. But we do have a dashboard where anyone in the community can go and see exactly what's happening with that situation.
Mark Terrell is District 4 Representative and Chair of the Intergovernmental Relations Committee on Charlotte's Mecklenburg County Commission. Excuse me, on the Mecklenburg County Commission. Lee Altman is an at-large member, and George Dunlop is the chair. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with three members of the nine-member Mecklenburg County Commission. George Dunlop chairs the commission. He is a District 3 representative. Mark Terrell is vice chair and is a District 4 representative. Lee Altman is here. She's an at-large member of the commission. And last year, the county, Lee, identified housing insecurity as one of its top priorities. It allotted $164 million to that and other key priorities like early childhood development, educational attainment, environmental stewardship, and more. And in his State of the County report, George Dunlop said that the county is on track to distribute those funds. Are we seeing results?
Well, absolutely. We were talking about affordable housing on the previous segment. We are funding, for example, legal aid to ensure that people who have rights to not be illegally evicted have the ability to exercise those rights. That's keeping people housed. We are helping people with critical home repair so that if they want to age in place and we want to prevent increased homelessness. And if we can just help people with some critical home repair, they can continue to stay where they are. We see those kinds of outcomes across all of our programs because we're very focused on only sending critical taxpayer dollars to programs that have a track record.
We talk a lot about housing and affordable housing, and certainly when the city people are here, we talk a lot about it because that's one of their key concerns. We have in Charlotte at the moment this office vacancy problem. It's particularly rampant in Uptown, but there are other areas of the county as well, like in Ballantyne, where office space is just wanting for tenants. And that has caused people to scurry to find alternative uses for some of this in lieu of tearing down some of these office towers, which has been spoken about. And recently, there was a request by a Charlotte developer for public money to convert the old Duke Energy headquarters into about 448 apartments and I think some retail on the street level. They asked local government for $19 million in property tax breaks paid out over 15 years. Charlotte City Council seemed to like the idea, but it kind of got the cold shoulder at the County Commission. George Dunlap, why?
Well, that's a good question. I was not at that meeting. I don't.
Lucky for you.
I will tell you that there are some meetings on my books to have a conversation about that. But I'd like to hear from the people who are a part of that committee why. I've been in some conversations about some of the struggles that they're having with the office towers, but I am not up on what happened at that
Well,
particular meeting.
I'm going to wager that the vice chair, Mark Jarrell, was there because he's chuckling mightily here as you struggle to answer that question. So, Mark, I'll ask you the same question. Why did it get a less than warm reception?
Yeah, so Commissioner Altman and I were both there,
Okay.
and I loved how you framed the question. But let me just say this, Mike, we're certainly sensitive to the issues that are happening in Uptown. And as well, we should be. One of the issues that we were looking at from a board perspective, we need community investments to align with our priorities. The county has a different focus at times as it relates to economic development and those level of investments than do our city colleagues. And so, but we are laser focused on making sure that the most vulnerable in the community, when we invest, that there will be outcomes for them. In this particular project, during that presentation, I personally didn't see that, and I don't think any of the other members saw that. And then what about other communities, other areas that are struggling as well? So how do we balance that out? And so I think there were a lot of questions that were raised in good faith, and conversations will continue.
So, Lee, since go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to add, I completely agree with what Commissioner Durrell just said. There are, I think we saw an estimate, something like 30 properties in Uptown that have issue with vacancy. I can't sort of fathom how, we obviously can't respond to the need for 30 such properties. I don't know why or how we would prioritize this particular one. And moreover, this was brought to us by a for-profit corporation. So, it's obviously unfortunate for the owner of that for-profit corporation that they may have made an investment that's not going to return what they want, but I don't really see how or why that is something that the taxpayers should be helping them out with. And we've heard from one of the most prominent local economists that this might be a sort of painful economic moment for some of those owners, but it's not a part of a wider sort of trend for that part of City of Charlotte. And so I just do not see this is an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars.
George Dunlap.
So, Mike, I think the conversation about that will continue because there could potentially be a role. I think what you heard from my colleagues is that they haven't heard that yet. What we would have to consider is what is the impact if that company no longer existed to our bottom line? What amount of taxes do they generate that we then use to help our citizens in Mecklenburg County? And so
Well,
we'll continue to have those.
they asked the government for $19 million in property tax breaks over 15 years, but the developer says the city and the county would still see an increase of $10.6 million in new property tax revenues after the rebate, and this would both increase the supply of apartments, which might suppress rents for some people because the more supply you have to satisfy demand, I guess the rents would come down, one would think, and would also help solve this vacancy problem or a small piece of it. Are they on the right track with that in your mind, or they haven't hit the mark yet?
Well, potentially, and that's why I said we're going to have continue to have this conversation because I don't think we've had an opportunity to fully look at what the impact is. Just the presentation itself, from what I hear from my colleagues, did not address the issues and specific concerns that Mark and Lee just shared with you. And so maybe they need to come back to the drawing table.
Well,
Maybe they need to redefine what they're trying to accomplish. I don't know. I don't think the conversation is dead because $10 million does add a significant amount to our tax rolls.
so Mark, in fact, you told one of the developers at that presentation that with the developers, Asana, to come back with a better plan that would fit the county's needs. What would that plan look like?
Well, I mean, our priorities are clear, Mike. We've got to make sure that the county is here as a safety net and to protect our most vulnerable. That's our focus as a board. That focus is not going to change. We're not here to make a developer, a for-profit corporation, to Commissioner Altman's point. We're not here to make them fit. They have to come with a fit for this community and from our perspective. And so we're not here to bend to them to make the deal work. That's not the business that we're in. We're in the service business, in the public service business. And so that's always going to be our focus.
So there was no affordable housing component to these to this
None.
proposal. Had there been, would you be looking at this differently in any way?
Possibly, yes, absolutely. That is the least of what would be required when every survey that we've seen in this community, housing has been at the top of the list, including education. So to come to a proposal with a proposal to the Board of County Commission, there's no housing, and then we're told it doesn't pencil. Well, if it doesn't pencil, that's not our problem. That doesn't make it the community's problem. If it doesn't pencil, then we're not the right partner. And if you don't come understanding our priorities, then you're not the right partner for us.
I want to come back to this idea that this is a for-profit company, the Altman. You mentioned this. Fellow Commissioner Elaine Powell asked the developer that night, and this is a quote, "Are we going to invest our taxpayer dollars to help you get more wealthy? Or are we going to invest our tax dollars in areas where it's necessary to reduce disparities?" Many people would agree with that view, but how is it different from governmental entities pumping money into sports facilities to support wealthy owners of those teams that play there?
Well, Mike, I think you'll have to ask our colleagues because that's not a choice that we on the county have made. That's tends to be more on the city side.
Okay.
So sorry.
That's all right. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear that there's a difference between city and county and to understand what that difference is. Meanwhile, last week, the county commission approved a $2.8 million business investment grant for Siemens Energy to grow its manufacturing of large power transformers. And this money will fund 475 new employees with an average pay of $82,000. How is this different, George Dunlap, from helping a developer with an investment they have made?
Well, so we're investing in something that wouldn't otherwise come to Mecklenburg County. So Siemens has the capability of moving just about anywhere in the country. We already have an existing facility. It is financially beneficial to us for them to grow that facility, bring the jobs, the high salaries that will help people in Mecklenburg County. Because oftentimes with those jobs come housing purchases, kids in our schools. There are a number of things that happen as a result of these kinds of investments. And it is, in fact, an investment because at the end of the deal, Mecklenburg County will have millions of dollars more on our rolls.
Yeah, and if I can chime in there, you know, what you're really asking, Mike, is what is the function and role of our Economic Development Department in Mecklenburg County? And as the chairman was just describing, you know, it is our job to try to bring great businesses to Mecklenburg County, to induce them to locate here. And we try to do that with companies that are going to bring fantastic jobs that pay a strong wage. As the chairman just noted, or I'm sorry, Mike, it was you who said that what that salary was very good, because we want great opportunities for our residents. And so that they can support their families and have dignity in work. And also so that we can grow our tax base, because the more money that we get from corporations to fund county services is less money that we need to get from our residents, individual homeowners, and taxes. So the more we can bring here in terms of strong economic development, it is a win-win-win for our residents. And that's something that I'm very proud of, the work that we've done on the economic development team, chaired by Commissioner Susan Rodriguez McDowell.
So let's switch gears here a bit. Last week, CMPD held a safety briefing at which they announced a 31% increase in homicides in this region this year. Much of the gun violence is being perpetrated by youthful offenders against other young people. And according to CMPD, juvenile suspects are responsible for 21 shootings and more than 220 of the 280 auto theft arrests this year. And last week, I believe you folks approved the Juvenile Crime Prevention Council's $2 million funding allocation request. That money is coming from the state's Department of Public Safety, but the county has to give its okay. And during that meeting, Mark, you made this comment.
I really don't have any idea of what the impact of any of these organizations are doing, how we measure that, and how that translates into the communities.
Put that into context. Are you talking about the people who were appearing before you that night at the meeting, or in general, you don't know what happens to the money that you're giving these organizations?
Yeah, number one, let me just say thank you for giving me the opportunity to put it in a better context. What I was trying to demonstrate was that I needed to see more data. I know that these organizations and these groups are doing great work. Our staff takes a deep dive. The committee takes a deep dive to look at those organizations and to prove the amount of funding that they receive. Because we do have a crisis in the community, though, I want to see the data so that we understand what that impact is. How do we know, Mike, if we should be investing more dollars in these organizations to scale or to expand and duplicate what's being done? And so the data will be one of those elements that will allow us to understand that.
Are you getting regular data drops or data dumps from these organizations that to whom you fund, and then they tell you what they're doing with it and how it's going?
Staff does, absolutely. Okay. And it is up to me us as commissioners to make sure that we're also seeing that data and to be able to evaluate it and ask questions.
Because Nicole Beverly is the interim chair of the Juvenile Crime Prevention Council, and she shared some of their plans for that money with WSOC-TV's Joe Bruno.
We actually are face-to-face with the youth that the programs or organizations serve, with parents and having conversations with them, youth having surveys and getting their impact and what they feel like they receive from the program and how it's changed their lives.
Are you satisfied with that answer?
Well, I think it's right now, I think there's a qualitative impact, that's fine, but I also need a quantitative impact as well. And so there needs to be a balanced approach. Nicole has stepped up into a leadership position and we appreciate that. And so it's a both and, Mike. And so we'll continue to make sure that we take a deep dive to get the information that's needed to get the outcomes that we want to achieve.
Lee Altman, you chair the Metropolitan Transit Commission, which is separate from, if I'm not mistaken, it's separate from the Mecklenburg County Commission. But we need to talk about this because you chair the Transit Commission and you led the charge for accountability at CATS and their maintenance woes, which occurred under a previous administrative team. Are you happy with what's been happening under the interim leadership of Brent Cagle?
Thanks for the question. Just so the listeners are clear, yes, the Metropolitan Transit Commission is separate and apart from the Mecklenburg County Commission. The MTC is made up of the following people: the mayors of the six towns, the mayor of the city of Charlotte, and the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission or his designee. And I am Chairman Dunlap's designee on the county, on the Metropolitan Transit Commission. In answer to your question, I am satisfied that the interim CEO is making tremendous strides. I have observed tremendous responsiveness to the concerns of the Metropolitan Transit Commission and the community, and I absolutely believe we're in a better place.
There's a lot more to talk about with regard to transit and transportation, which I want to do when we come back. We'll also talk about public education in Mecklenburg County, because that's one of the key things that the county does. It funds education to a great degree, and we'll come back and talk about that and more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. George Dunlap joins us. He's the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission. Mark Jarrell is the vice chair. And Lee Altman is an at-large member of the commission. She is also the chair of the Metropolitan Transit Commission. And because she's here, we got to talk about transit for a moment, even though it's kind of disconnected in a way from county commission. For years, Lee, as you well know, there was no movement with regard to the Red Line and being able to use the freight tracks that are owned by Norfolk Southern. They said, nope, you can't use them. That position seems to be softening. And there was a series of recent public meetings held to answer questions about a revised plan for that Red Line into Uptown from the Davidson area. Does that mean that it appears likely that Norfolk Southern is on board with allowing the use of its tracks?
I think that it would be, if history is any indication, no one should answer that question except Norfolk Southern. But I will say that I think it's certainly appropriate for CATS to get refreshed input from the residents as to their interest and their interest on the specific details of where stops could be. I attended several of those meetings that have occurred over the last 2 weeks in North Mecklenburg, where the proposed so-called Red Line would go. It's called, that's the name that it's just historically been called. It would travel from uptown to the north. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a tremendous interest. We have so many people coming here a day and traffic is just getting worse. And we all know that we need solutions. We need transit options.
The reason for this recent series of meetings about the Red Line with the public was to show how the design of that Red Line has changed a bit since 2008, when I think it was first proposed. So it's been 16 years. And because of growth and development, they've moved some of the stops. They've relocated a few stops. They've added a few stops along the line, proposed stops, because it's not built yet. That's just in 16 years. And one of the criticisms of any kind of rail system is that it's permanent. It's inflexible. It doesn't move. So if things have changed in 16 years before the thing is even built, what happens in the next 16 years after it's built?
It's a fair question, but I think we sort of have the cart before the horse or the train before the process. We have to first see whether or not we can even actually get rights to run this line. And then we have to have a really serious community conversation about how we're going to fund it. There's a lot of frustration, very legitimate concerns in North Mecklenburg, because the half-cent sales tax, a transit tax that has been being paid for 20 years, really hasn't delivered the transit services to the north that those residents have been paying for so long. So, you know, we can sort of get into the details of you know, what the train, where it should stop and what it might actually look like. But we have some more fundamental questions to address before that.
One of the fundamental questions and one of the fundamental conversations that has to be had is between local authorities and the legislature, because to get additional tax money for this, you have to convince the legislature to allow that to happen. And we know that I think it was Phil Berger, who is the president of the Senate, state Senate, doesn't like the transit plan. He says it concentrates too much on rail and alternative forms of transportation and not enough on roads, which is what people use. And anytime I've ever asked any city officials about the status of conversations with Raleigh, I get this vague answer. Can you tell me if any substantive conversations have been going on between this region, either the Metropolitan Transit Commission, the county, the city, et cetera, with leaders in Raleigh, or have we just been spinning our wheels for 16 years?
I think it's probably fair to say that these negotiations are being spearheaded by the city of Charlotte, and they would be the better entity to answer that question.
And they don't seem to want to answer it, I got to tell you.
I personally have had my own conversations with some of those individuals, but that is not the only important conversation that needs to happen. We are not fully synced up here inside Mecklenburg County, and we have some very important negotiations within the members of the MTC for an interlocal agreement that governs how money that goes to CATS is going to be the governance structure over how those monies are spent. So that involves the mayors of Mecklenburg County, the mayor of Charlotte, and Mecklenburg County government. And that's very important too. I think we have to first get synced up here locally before we turn to the General Assembly and make that full pitch. And that conversation is still ongoing here.
I could talk about this for another hour, but we won't. But there's one more question I want to ask about CATS and Lynx. Last year, particularly leading up to the bus drivers and train operators contract negotiations, there was great concern on their part about safety on these vehicles. And there has been some concern by riders about safety. Late last month, interim CATS CEO Brent Cagle told the commission it takes money to improve safety. And he said, we believe it's important to double the spending we have on safety and security. The budget for the next fiscal year is still a work in progress, I know, but did that statement get the attention of budget planners? And are you in agreement with that kind of a request for funding?
Absolutely. I mean, we, as a concept, yes, we need to do everything we can to ensure that all of our public spaces, from our schools to our transit system, is absolutely safe for our residents. We have to invest in our infrastructure, and that's something that I am very focused on doing.
So let's move on to schools and education. Mecklenburg County helps fund Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, and every year it seems the schools come to the county asking for more money than they did the previous year. This year is no exception. They say they are asking for $35 million more this year. Superintendent Crystal Hill says that ask reflects their, quote, very, very basic needs, and says that they were conservative in their request. It includes $12 million for capital projects that were not included in the $2.5 billion bond referendum that voters said yes to last November, the largest bond referendum in the history of the state. And she says that after all the meetings with parents about the school's budget priorities, the answer that topped the list time and again was getting the best teachers. And that is why $24 million of their request is for teacher investment. George Dunlap, what was the board's reaction to that request?
Well, the board has not officially received the...
What's your reaction to that request?
Well, having done this a few times, it's possible. I think that our board has seen a different attitude among the board members on CMS. We're having more dialogue between the two boards. And all of us want to see CMS succeed and be successful. So in light of the fact that our county manager has not presented her budget, I would just simply say that it's possible. We'll have to wait for the presentation. I think it takes place next week or week after next, where we'll hear it's exactly what their requests are.
Well, Mark, I said it when I mentioned the $35 million that they say they are asking for $35 million more over last year. And I say they say it because WFAE's education reporter Ann Doss Helm says it's more like $63.5 million when you add in what the system is labeling one-time requests. And County Manager Dina DiIorio, who has not presented this in a budget form yet, has said that this approach is not all that alarming, although she's still working on the county budget, which will come out in May. There are questions about whether funding the schools at this level would require a tax increase, would it?
Right now, we're going to wait for the manager's recommendation. I can tell you this, Mike, the community is serious about education. We believe that teacher retention is important, so we're aligned with the superintendent on that. I think, generally speaking, we know that there's an issue in Raleigh. We need more funding from the state level so that we can continue to get the produce the best outcomes for our residents and for our students. And so I want to hear the manager's recommendation. We'll have substantive discussions and ask the superintendent some tough questions, and we'll see where we land.
Lee Altman, both you and Mark Terrell sit on the Economic Development Committee. What, because the city has already spoken about their need to raise taxes, and probably will. So what would be the economic impact of the county also raising taxes at this stage of the game?
Well, what I would say is that I and my colleagues are incredibly sensitive to the burden that any tax increase imposes on our residents. And there's, you know, everything is more expensive. You know, cost inflation is being seen across all sectors, including the work that we do, you know, materials and labor, everything is more expensive. We want to deliver the services that the residents expect of us, including, you know, almost $1 billion in education and literacy programs. And so, you know, we just have the difficult task of trying to ensure the highest quality services for the best bang for the buck, to support the kind of life that our residents want here. And so all I can tell you at this stage is that we take it very seriously, with tremendous deliberation and care, because we know what a big deal it is for our residents when and if we do have to do that.
George Dunlap, it's no secret that a couple of years ago you got into a little dust-up with a previous school board over funding versus performance. In other words, what you get for the money that you're giving them. And some of that has been settled. I guess some of those concerns have been addressed. Are you confident that the money you're giving them is resulting in better outcomes now?
Well, based on the reports that I've received, based on the conversations that I've had, I feel better about the direction of the CMS school board. I feel better about the investments that the county makes. However, we're not going to stop there. You heard Mark Jarrell say we're focused now on the data. We want to see the numbers. We want to see the impact that it's having. But then again, I think too often we let Raleigh off the hook. You know, these guys are sitting on a $4 billion surplus and still refusing to fund education. I don't get it.
Well, let's talk about that.
And if we can just jump in, you know, yes. Underfunding education, but also underfunding all kinds of infrastructure like roads. So, you know, we have all kinds of road problems, really serious road problems in Mecklenburg County. And meanwhile, the folks in Raleigh are bragging about their surplus. So, you know, it's a sleight of hand.
Well, let's talk about that for just a second, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. This is not really your bailiwick. But if the state funded public education more fully by not taking money away from the traditional public schools and giving it to the charter schools, because that money to run those charter schools comes from the public school budget, by not funneling money into opportunity scholarships now for everyone who wants one, by complying with the court's decision in the Leandro case, which mandates that they fund more robustly the public school system, something they have ignored for 20 plus years, would the county and its residents be relieved of some of this economic burden for funding the schools to the tune that we have to fund them, Mark?
Absolutely. 1,000%. We could leverage those resources and really invest in other areas that would improve the quality of life for our residents. If they would take on their responsibility, it would certainly relieve us of that pressure. But I would tell you, this board and previous boards have certainly stepped up to the challenge to thread that needle.
So, George, a while ago, go ahead. Somebody want to say something? No? Okay. A while ago, the city decreased their support for the Arts and Science Council and set up their own funding mechanism for local arts organizations. The county stuck with the Arts and Science Council, and now they and the Foundation for the Carolinas have proposed getting together and funding local arts to the tune of $21 million, $10 million from the county, $11 million from the city. First of all, George Dunlap, why did the county stick with the ASC when the city divorced itself?
Well, the ASC had gone through a tremendous amount of, planning and had a focus on diversity and inclusion, which was of great importance to the commissioners. And you've heard it stated here this morning about how important that is. And so when we read their diversity statement, we believe that it aligns with the beliefs of Mecklenburg County. And therefore we decided to continue to fund that program.
So I have 1 minute left. Are you on board with this proposal to kind of have the Foundation for the Carolinas and the ASC merge, for lack of a better term? And do you think the city was blindsided? Because Malcolm Graham, a city council member, said he was blindsided by this and the request for $11 million.
Well, I will just tell you this. The conversations have been going on. I think it's a win-win for everybody. I think it's an absolute win for the arts community. Given the fact that Mecklenburg County is an arts community, when you think about the number of jobs it creates, when you think about the opportunities that are available for the creatives and the artists in our community, I think it's a win-win situation.
Do you have another hour? Because I have another hour's worth of questions for all three of you, but I don't think we're allowed to do that. Unfortunate. George Dunlap is the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission, represents District 3. Mark Jarrell is the vice chair representing District 4. And Lee Altman is an at-large member of the Mecklenburg County Commission. Come back. Thank you all for the hour. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.